Merlin and I are destined to never be on a podcast together.
Is that how it works?
I think so.
That's how it
it's
works.
It's like a magnet. Oh.
I don't want to, Jason, I don't want to talk about Earth stuff.
I don't want to talk about Earth stuff, no.
Let's move on.
Yeah, two buttholes.
I just got to that episode, and it finally sold. Actually, there were like two or three back to back to back that were just superb because they all featured butthole jokes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of the features of Hello from the Magic Tavern that I wasn't expecting, and I find delightful.
Yes.
That's great. That's great.
But yes. I don't want to talk about
Earth
stuff.
Chunt favorited one of Dan's tweets today.
Did he?
Yes.
Wow.
Well, somebody thanked me and Dan for mentioning Hello from the Magic Tavern on the Six Colors podcast, and they mentioned Magic Tavern, and so all the Magic Tavern people saw that tweet, and they thought nice. That was nice. Yeah, that's a good podcast. All right. Everybody recording?
Recording.
All right.
Yep.
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 I'm recording.
All right. John, are you recording?
Sure thing.
All right.
He wasn't sure.
You're always recording.
You could tell he wasn't sure.
But I wanted to make sure you were still there.
Yeah, I was there. I was just muted so you don't hear my clicky mouse wheel.
All right. Do you opening statements, John? Yes?
My notes for this movie are very much front-loaded, so I think I'll have a lot to say. Like, we'll get out of the credits in hour two, but then the rest of it, I feel like we'll go fast.
All right.
But no formal opening statement, per se.
No formal opening statement. All right. Okay. All right, well, let's do it.
Technically, I believe it's pronounced Naushka.
Naushka.
Yeah, Naushka.
Yeah, we need Sean Connery here to do it justice.
Are big fans of this movie referred to as Naushketeers?
Oh, Steve.
If they're not, they should be.
When we watched this for the first Miyazaki episode, I commented about how I watched the dub version, and John like had a fit. He was like, no, Lord Yupa is not Patrick Stewart. Stop it. So I did watch it with the subtitles this time. And so now I do know that it is Naushka or whatever
Naushka
that they say, and not Nausicaa with the umlaut over the last A.
I watched I did it the right way, John. I watched the Japanese version with the subtitles. And then on my second viewing, I attempted to watch the dubbed version in English, and I did not get very far because a lot of the opening of this film, there's a lot of exposition, and somehow I can read the subtitles and it doesn't seem awful. But when I hear somebody speaking in English and actually trying to say these lines, it's like George Lucas lines. You know, you can't say these things, George. It just comes off sounding ridiculous.
You never know if the translation is like literal or not, because there may be idioms that, I mean, for the little Japanese that I know, very often I will hear a phrase that I know I've heard it a million times before, and I'll see how they choose to subtitle it and how they choose to have the English actors read it. And it's like, that's not what that phrase means. You've expanded that out in a pedantic way, so it sounds like
right.
Something that is catering to American audiences.
The worst part of it was that it seemed like the exposition that was in the Japanese, or at least in the subtitles, was not enough for dumb American audiences. So they had to explicitly point out that it was the red eyes of the Ohm that indicated that it was in a rage. And I felt like I was being talked down to. So I went back to the Japanese.
I did watch the version with the Japanese subtitles. However, it was the version with the American credits, and I watched at least the beginning of it with my spouse, Steven, and he threw a minor fit being like, I don't get to hear Captain Picard and Luke Skywalker talking. And I was like, no, you don't.
No.
That didn't last very long. Eventually, I had to take the computer to my bedroom and watch it by myself.
Yeah, so that's the secret to this movie in terms of the subs and dubs. Like, as with most Miyazaki movies, they get pretty much A-list voice talent, and they're not bad dubs. I mean, they're actually all pretty good dubs. All the actors are good actors. They do a good job. They put effort into it. But it's not the original movie. And in this movie in particular, the secret is, and I don't want to get into this pedantically for, you know, watching on The Incomparable, but the opening credits is one of my favorite parts of this program, and if you watch it on like a DVD or some optical media or whatever, very often, depending on what version you have, if you watch it in Japanese for the credits, you don't have these big Roman, you know, not Roman, or what is the American alphabet called?
Arabic
numerals. Anyway,
Arabic numerals, right? But Roman characters.
No, that's number. Yeah. Anyway, you don't have English text mucking up the beautiful composition of the, you know, to us indecipherable Japanese words that lay over these credits, because they're just, this credit sequence is I love it for a lot of reasons. One of them is just purely aesthetically, everything is arranged as like a little composition, and sometimes there's a little bit of movement or animation, and sometimes a little glider goes across the screen, and sometimes the you know, the scary guys walk towards the camera, or sometimes you're panning across a mural, but it all fits together. But then they have to put the English credits in there, and then you've got these big English words in a different font, in a different like intensity, laid down over the top of the credits, totally breaking the rhythm of the thing. So
that, it does sort of ruin the ominous feel of the giant warriors walking through fire when you suddenly see the words Shia LaBeouf appear on your screen.
Yeah, that was moment where Steven was kind of okay with not hearing the English words.
He does a pretty good job, too, and especially since he doesn't sound like Shia LaBeouf because he was so much younger. But the credit sequence itself, like, this is the, I suppose, I mean, I'm not going to, it's not like Star Wars invented this, so many things, but where you can get a lot of exposition out of the way quickly in the beginning before like the movie proper starts. And this one even has the big wall of text of like, let me tell you what happened to the world and we're going to jump in here. But that's not the very naturalistic part. The rest of the credits is showing scenes and trying to show a story through a tapestry with these, you know, pictures of, as you would imagine, more primitive people might have drawn their understanding of what happened to the world. I love the music that plays over it, and I love how it transitions from animated scenes of the past and crudely drawn things on a tapestry to the much more crystal clear world of, okay, now the movie is starting, and now we see some clouds and stuff, and we see Nausicaa flying on the glider and everything right. Like that. That whole sequence and the music that goes in it is, I think, the best opening to any animated movie I've ever seen. I love every part of it.
I wanted to, just while we are talking about subs and dubs and all that, before we move away from it, I did watch the subtitle version this time. But yeah, I'm reminded, like, since you mentioned it, John, they did a really amazing job of casting the English dub here, the Disney 2005 dub. I wanted to especially mention, not just, yes, Patrick Stewart is Lord Yupa, and Edward James Olmos has a part, and Mark Hamill has a part, but they got the definitive old lady animation voice, Tress MacNeille, to be Obaba. That is the definitive. And if I had never heard the English dub and you showed me Kuratoa, I would have imagined him as Chris Sarandon from The Princess Bride, and he is the voice of that character. So they did some, they kind of nailed the voice casting of the English version. But that said,
although one problem that I did have, go ahead, you can give your thoughts.
I didn't do that. I did the subtitle version, and two, watching a movie with subtitles really reminds you how many times you like look at your phone to see what that message was that just came in, and you realize, oh crap, I need to back up the movie because I have no idea what they're saying. They're speaking Japanese.
You're not supposed to be holding your phone when you're watching a movie, Jason. Well, do I send someone over there?
I get an alert, and I'm like, oh, geez, what's going on? And then I miss dialogue.
It's called Do Not Disturb.
I turn the alerts off on my phone before I start watching a movie. Thank you.
Well,
one of the other problems
welcome
I had
to the 20th century, I guess, people.
one of the other problems I had with the casting of the English dub was that I had just watched for the first time. I watched this movie for the first time with the Japanese subtitles, and the voice actor for Nausicaa she has a very high-pitched voice. Mm-hmm. So I had a sense of her as being a certain age. And Alison Lohman, who does the voice of Nausicaa in the English dub, has a much more mature-sounding voice and pitted her as more of a teenager or almost a young woman. Mm-hmm. And it just completely changed my view of the character. And I was like, oh, no, I can't be. This is like watching a different movie altogether. I need to talk about this on a podcast tomorrow. So I can't be confused as to things that are this basic. So I went back to the Japanese dub at that point, but I thought that was kind of strange how much that changed my view of the character. Just imagining her as, and again, maybe, yeah, you know, just the fact that the Japanese women tend to have higher pitched voices. She may be
probably 26.
Yeah, very, very well could be. And that's probably just my perspective on the thing, but it really did kind of shock me how different it felt.
There's some, we talk about this every time we watch a Miyazaki movie. or any Japanese movie that's been translated. I also wonder sometimes about whether what I hear in the Japanese is, even though I don't understand it, I am picking up tone of voice, and whether I am mislabeling tone of voice because as an American, I expect those cadences to mean something in English that may not be the same thing culturally. And I watched a couple of scenes with both versions when I was watching this. And because one of the things I noticed is that there, especially toward the end, there are all these kids around the old lady. And as dramatic things are happening at the end of the movie, they are just shouting at the top of their lungs. And it is so annoying. And I thought, I wonder what if they're as annoying in the English version. And I switched to it. And like literally in the Japanese version, it's like, ah! And in the American version, it's like, huh. And I thought, so culturally, is it a choice that yes, those kids are screaming at the top of their lungs and they're really annoying in the Japanese version, or is it that that tone of voice? I'm sure we'll hear from people who know the answer, but
isn't it kind of an anime trope?
Yeah, it may just be a Japanese cultural thing. But I was struck by that. There were several points where I thought, like, boy, those kids are really loud and annoying. And I'm not quite sure the movie actually wants me to think that. And the English dub definitely doesn't want me to think that. But the Japanese version, the original version, that you know, they're shouting really loud.
It's funny that you say that because, in thinking back to those scenes, yeah, those kids were annoying, but maybe because I've watched enough anime, like that just washed right over me. Wow. Because I've grown kind of a thick skin to that type of annoying shouting from young characters, because it does happen a lot.
Yeah, that is definitely an anime trope. It isn't like I didn't note it at all. Now that you mention it, I'm like, oh yeah, they do that. But that's an every.
I just thought it was interesting, just in the Miyazakis
that we've watched. That's been the case. There are always some screaming kids, and there's the same old lady. Voice.
We don't know what would happen next. But it struck me that it was interesting, the English version, that they like toned a lot of that stuff down. And I was surprised by that, because they're taking that trope out when they do it. I guess because if you're listening to the English dub, you're not down with anime tropes, because otherwise you'd be watching the subtitled version like a good anime nerd would.
Oh, they trampled the baby, too.
No, they didn't trample the baby. You assume they scooped the baby.
Yes, the baby flies in the air as well.
She flies in the air. They scoop the baby up.
No, the baby shoots into the air as well. I watched it twice.
Well, maybe that's how they deal with it. It's like cats picking up their kittens by the scruff of their neck. But anyway, the idea is that the baby-ome tells the other ones, this person helped me, so bring her back to life with your magic.
I'm just going to say that, at least to me, it's obvious that Teto cannot talk at the end.
Yeah, I'm with you.
You may have your different viewpoint.
He should have had a Phil Hartman voice and said, meow.
Wink at the camera.
He was there all along. We just didn't know he could talk.
Hey, John, I was going to ask you about this. You used the phrase toxic jungle. Is that in some of the subtitles as well? Because the subs that I read, it was all Sea of Decay, which I thought was an interesting contrast.
That's the sub. Toxic jungle is in the English. Featured primarily in, I believe, all of the English dubs, and also in the masquered version of this movie, Warriors of the Wind, that is like a chopped up thing that they did years ago, and it's what convinced Miyazaki to never allow anyone who brings his movies to the U.S. to edit a single frame of them. But yeah, that's the English version of it. And yeah, and subtitles are all Sea of Decay.
That was part of what convinced me that I needed to get off of the dub, was because I was, why did you change that? Sea of Decay is so evocative. It's got a great sound to it. It kind of encompasses, you know, as the toxin spread, the sort of enormity of the thing. And Toxic Jungle to me just didn't work at all.
And by the way, I just took a look, and the last frame that the baby ohm is on screen, it is in the arms of the larger ohm. And the next frame, Nausicaa is still flying through the air, and the baby ohm is off screen. So indeterminate, but I choose to believe that the baby ohm was scooped up by the adult ones, because that's what they were doing.
All right, you go ahead and believe that.
When they show Nausicaa flying through the air, the baby ohm is nowhere to be seen.
Well, they were both knocked into the air. The baby ohm was caught, probably on purpose, whereas Nausicaa was not.
Right. I'll she flies about 600 feet into the air and is then trampled by the ohm, but survives.
Back and to the left.
Yeah. Baby ohm goes up and to the left.
I think what happened is that the fall, she was cushioned from the fall by the squishy body of that baby ohm, who was also thrown through the air.
All right, well, okay. Have we decided whether the baby Ohm lives or not, by the way?
The baby Ohm lives. Mm-hmm. It gets thrown into the air, clearly.
It gets thrown in the air, but it's caught by some other Ohm.
I showed the last two frames the baby Ohm is on, and in both of those frames, it is in contact with the adult Ohm's tentacle, finger.
Well, that's fine. It's caught, but it is initially tossed into the air by the stampeding
Ohms. It's tossed from the ground to the height of the grasping claws of the adult Ohm.
I think it goes higher than that.
And then they show in the air, only Nausicaa is shown in the air in the close-up. So if the Ohm was in the air, it is not shown. The farthest the Ohm gets is not above the height of the mother Ohm. In fact, not above even the height of the grasping claws of the mother Ohm.
No, the baby gets hit first. She's behind the baby.
I know, but I'm saying the height. How high does the baby Ohm go off the ground? It does not go over the height of the grasping claws. Again, look, those are the last two frames.
Well, those frames you cherry-pick, yeah, they're the last two frames. They don't show the baby
arcing into
the air.
But every other frame, the Ohm is lower. Every other frame, the Ohm is starting from the ground and going up to that height. Do you understand?
So glad I asked.
Totally Zapruder this. You can go frame by frame. It's animation. There are no frames that you're missing. These were the drawings that were photographed for the film.
Is this coming from the Blu-ray, John? I think maybe the definition on your copy is not that good.
This is from the Blu-ray and has nothing to do with definition.
Oh, I wanted to ask if people knew the reference. There's a reference where they say this is one of the last things left from the old civilization. They say that it went into space.
Yeah, the spaceship.
Looks more like a submarine.
Is that a battleship Yamato reference?
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, there are so many spaceships around the same time in Japanese animation. I don't know enough about the program to look at it. I always thought it looked more like a submarine and less
like the
aircraft carrier that Yamato is, but. Mm-hmm. It's hard to tell.
Yeah, I just assumed it was a nod to something that came before that I hadn't seen.
Yeah, I tried to
look
it up.
Or that I have seen and I just didn't recognize it.
And I couldn't find it, but as a kid who watched Star Blazers, that was what I decided in my own little personal headcanon to believe that it was a reference to Space Battleship Yamato.
But it fulfills the important role of the post-apocalyptic thing of here are the leftover scraps of the elders who were so much more advanced than we are.
That's why it's like, space. Oh,
yeah, we'll hide in that thing and it will be impenetrable because we don't even know how the heck they made it. It's almost as if like an alien race had left all this stuff around.
Right. Well, and it also suggests that the destruction of the Earth happens sometime far into our future. So perhaps there's time for us to turn from our polluting ways.
Yeah, if people start building giant red beings with cone heads, maybe.
Run.
Yeah. No, there's nowhere to run.
No. Just start to learn.
Find a nice valley with a good breeze off of it.
Yeah, that's good.
Hunker down.
Yep, I recommend.
The wind keeps the toxins out.
The wind. Wind is not your enemy in this movie. Wind is your friend.
Wind is a friend. When the wind stops, bad things happen.
Bad things happen.
Baby Ohms get thrown into the air.
Indeed, that's the worst. anything else about this movie before we close the book on it? No? We did it. All right.
We did it,
guys. Woohoo.
All right. We watched a movie from 1984 with that little music in there.
What a year. What a year 1984 was. Did anything bad happen in 1984?
I am curious about this, actually. I forgot this. This is the third Miyazaki we've watched, and this is the third where the main character visually is basically the same girl.
It is not the same girl. They're
so
different.
Oh, it's so close, though. Satsuki and Nausicaa and Kiki are all so similar.
They're different in almost every way.
Oh, my God.
An adorable young girl can be different within the bounds of Miyazaki's animation. He's not drawing every line in their face. He's suggesting their facial features. They have different
He's suggesting they're the same girl.
Different face,
different
shape, faces,
different time
different
and space.
Hair, different body types. I mean, like... They're as right, different well, as they
Nausicaa
can be.
Nausicaa clearly is more mature. Facially, though,
you know,
facially though, she's way similar to Satsuki and Kiki, I think.
I think all you're seeing is that all Miyazaki humans look like Miyazaki humans, which is true. That's the style
that
he draws humans.
How many more of his films have this same girl in
them? The Princess and Castle in the Sky is basically the same girl.
Yeah, they're pretty similar. I will say that.
They're only similar in that they're all conventional. But beyond that, like they have signature features. Who has short, fluffy red hair? No other ones of his heroines do.
Oh, they have short, fluffy, dark hair.
Some of them have pin straight short hair. Some of them have long flowing hair. Some of them have ponytails. Some of them don't.
None of the films that we've watched does anybody have anything other than relatively close cropped hair.
Well, you should.
It may be a slightly different color, and they have the same face. But you're right; they're very different.
She's redhead. She's got red hair.
I mean, you can say the same thing about all the men in the movie too. Like there are stereotypes. It is animation. You
don't forget the old lady.
This
old lady cleans the soot sprites out of the house in Totoro.
Yeah, I was gonna say the same old lady is in every Miyazaki movie
with the same voice too.
She's 10,000 years old and she's in every one of them.
She's seen it all. That's why she's so wise.
Yeah,
like, I'm not criticizing it, and maybe it's just like an archetype thing, but it's striking to me that they're so similar, at least in my purview.
It's striking to me that you don't see them as so incredibly different. You put giant posters of each of their faces on the wall. You can view them from a half a mile away and pick out which is which.
Whatever you say, Dan Morin.
I enjoyed it. It's not my least favorite Miyazaki movie that I've seen, but it is not in my top three, I guess, four, something like that. But it's fine. And the ohms, I like the ohms. There's just something about them. I can't explain it. They're weird. And they got the weird domey, all the eyes. And first time we see them, it's a empty shell that's being cut open. And I don't know. They're fascinating.
But the bug designs in general are pretty cool.
Yeah.
The Ushiabus are interesting with their little rattles they shake. And
I thought all the
big
bugs
flat
the
flying
the same
thing.
Same bug face, right, Steve?
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah, just they're big. Some bugs are big and some bugs
are
little.
Big,
but
some
all
bugs
bugs.
Are, yeah, they all have
guy,
like
a guy makes a good, very
eyes.
Valid point, and suddenly someone takes it to heart and has to carry it around with him for the rest of his life.
That's right. That's how it works.
That's how it works.
I suppose we will move on to the next one chronologically, don't you think, John?
It seems unlikely.
I don't know.
That's not the system I'm on. I'm going to pick the next one, and I'm almost certainly not going to pick the next one chronologically.
You're not going to pick Castle in the Sky? Because that's the one I'm like ready to watch.
No,
Castle in the Sky.
It's too similar. You can't do Castle in the Sky right after Nausicaa.
It
you
is quite similar.
You got to have a palate cleanser.
So what do you think we're going to do next?
I don't know. Haven't decided
Let's
yet.
Let's do one where like a pig or a horse is the protagonist.
Interesting. Or a fish.
One where I can't get confused.
Maybe we'll go all up to Spirited Away, which I know is distant from this time-wise, but it is very different.
One of my favorites.
Is that one of the depressing ones?
That's one of the ones I've seen. Spirited Away is awesome. I don't think it's depressing. Is it depressing? No. It's a little
There's one
sad
that makes people
end,
sad.
I guess.
There's at least one that makes people sad.
They all make you sad if you think long and hard enough about them. Because
everything makes you sad if
you
think hard about
them. I feel like you start to get to know the creator, because they're not all his stories, but he always brings a sensibility to them. And his sensibility is, even though the movies are very often happy ending and optimistic, he has a dim view of humanity as a whole. And that all beautiful things are eventually going to decay, and maybe they're fleetingly, but in the end, you know, he's got a dark streak running through him, and I think that's in all of these movies. It sort of gives it kind of a melancholy resonance underneath the happy, jumping, smiling things. Even Totoro,
he can't seem to let it go either. He keeps coming back to lecture us again.
Yeah, that's his thing. He's nothing if not consistent, and he is not, I feel like, a slave of the times. Even though stylistically there are touches of it, he's got to be him. I can't believe this is not a higher in your list. Like, I don't know if this is my favorite, but it's up there. Because it's the genre movie, I guess,
I like Castle in the Sky better.
This is the end of the world, Miyazaki.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have. Which ones have you guys done already?
Kiki and Totoro.
Yeah. Okay, two which I have not seen. So, they're both cute.
But those are the best ones.
Oh, they're good.
This is what I've heard, and
they're
I just
good.
Haven't gotten around to seeing them.
Although, if the reason you like this is largely the post-apocalyptic nature of this, those are about as opposite as you can get.
Which is why you picked this, right, John?
As our next, part of the reason you picked this as our next film was because it was such a contrast to.
No, because it's like my third favorite movie. That's why I picked this. Totoro, I feel like, is the starter Miyazaki for everything. And then Kiki is my number one favorite. And then this is like one or two, you know, And then, like, all the ones that so many other people, if you just ask the general populace because they haven't seen a lot of them, people really love Spirited Away and will rank that really high. Although for me, it's down lower, but I appreciate
the Mononoke too.
That's kind of how I feel. Yeah. I saw Mononoke in the theater with a dub, and I just didn't like it. So I haven't gone back and actually watched it with the Japanese.
It's not my favorite. It's Justin's favorite Miyazaki, and I just don't.
What Mononoke is?
Yeah, I just don't like it. I think the same reasons Nausicaa isn't my favorite. Like, I like Castle in the Sky is one of my favorites. Howl's Moving Castle. I like castles.
I did see Howl's Moving Castle, and it was
That's a
weird.
Super weird movie, yeah.
I think Spirited Away is in the weird. If you had to lump them, there's like conventional.
Spirited Away
movies,
is super then, weird.
Spirited Away is super weird. Castle, Howl's Moving Castle is super weird. Castle in the Sky is pretty conventional. It is like a kinder, gentler version of Nausicaa, and Mononoke is like more grim version of Nausicaa. I do like Mononoke a lot, and surprisingly, that's the movie that my daughter first became obsessed with. She saw all these, and she would watch them a lot, but she went on this Mononoke kick where she was like, every weekend, I just need to watch Mononoke over. She's must have seen it like 50 times by now, and I don't know. I probably saw it too young, but she was super obsessed with that. I really do like Mononoke, but like I feel like Nausicaa, Castle in the Sky, and Mononoke are three, they're the same movie three times in three different styles, and Nausicaa is my favorite one of those.
I just thought the world building on this was great, but we were rushing through things so much that I had a hard time really, you know, caring what happened.
It's a pretty long movie as far as animation goes.
I don't think it's nearly long enough to explore everything that needed to be explored.
Well, I mean, like, I'm sure they would tell you have to read the, you know, the original source material to get the, you know, however multi-volume are. I've never read the source material. I don't want to because I don't want it to, like, be like, oh, now the movie seems, you know, pale in comparison, because as far as I'm concerned, I filled in all the gaps in the movie myself, and I like it as a one big unit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I've seen quite a bit of anime that just feels like that because so much of it has been adapted from the manga. So I guess I'm kind of used to filling in the gaps a little bit myself and feeling like sometimes the televised anime is just a high level overview of something that's much deeper. So I'm all right with that.
And you just have to enjoy the characters and the setting and with all anime and not get too hung up on the plot because so much this is so rich in plot compared to other anime that's like barely held together by like, we have cool characters, we have cool setting, and don't worry about anything anyone says or does.
That's right? Totoro.
Totoro does have a story and a theme and they keep the story out of it, but so many other ones have this big complicated plot that they tell you none of in the movie. It's not even like they're trusting the audience to figure it out. They're like, no, there's no way you can figure it out. It's not on the screen. not Miyazaki, but like other anime. I mean, even the Ghost in the Shell TV series is a lot like that, where like drop you in, there's going to be 50% of the stuff you just have no chance of understanding, but just go with it. Are you guys up for anime 103 or 4? Because I've picked out the two movies. I just feel like I need to watch them myself to make sure I'm not making a terrible mistake. But I have two movies ready for this year.
I need some lead time, that's all.
They're short. It's like one is like, you know, one is a short film and one is a movie that's like 90 minutes long. So it's easy viewing.
Cool. Yeah.
And it's another, you know, paired set. I really do feel like I have to watch them again because
you may regret your choice.
I'm doing the same thing with trying to pick my mic in the movies. I have to watch them again to make sure. Really? Do you really remember these movies that you saw in 1997? Watch it again. So I will, but I'll send that out to the group. The next few months.
Sure. Yeah. It'll probably be the first time I watch something I haven't seen already for one of these.
I think it'll be exciting. I think no one has seen either of these because they're pretty obscure, but I think they're more accessible than Ghost in the Shell. And even Jason will be able to watch them and not shirk his duty like he did last time.
Amazing. The title suggestions for this episode, there weren't that many, but there was Bugsby Buggin'.
You gotta watch that last frame of the movie with the bugs. They pan across the bugs and it's like, hey man, I'm a bug.
The Ohm Whisperer. I liked that one.
I liked that one.
Mm-hmm.
Very Friendly Tentacles.
No.
That's my choice.
Not good for an anime movie.
Uh-huh. No.
And Lord Yuba, come and see my secret room.
And if they could use smell, they would.
I like the Ohm and
the Ohm Whisperer.
Bugsby Buggin. Both of those are good.
Bugsby Buggin.
Just got to look at this fella. I'll give you a good Bugsby Buggin shot. As they pan across, he's like on top of a big spore. He's like, hey, man.
Yep. John's still sending frames.
That's Bugsby Buggins. That's the title. That's like towards the end of the credit sequence. They show everyone else and they're like, and you know what? The bugs are still there too, and they're still bugs. Look at this guy. He's sitting on top of a big stalk thing.
Yes, but we're in tune with the bugs now. It's cool.
Yeah. Bugs are in charge.
They'll still
now.
Kill you at a moment's notice if you hurt anything in their toxic jungle, but you
sure.
know.
Well, but now yeah, we understand don't, why. Don't threaten they're the protecting sea. The you know, the delicate balance of recovering from yeah. our previous sins.
They're pretty high-minded for mindless bugs, that they understand these plants are purifying the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, protect the hive. That's high functioning.
They're not protecting the hive, they're protecting the forest. I don't think there's any animals that protect their ecosystem consciously.
Yeah.
Not even humans. Isn't that deep?
Not particularly.
This is so true.
Close to home, man. Close to home.
Yeah, right in the fields.
Miyazaki will make environmentalists of us yet.
He's going to keep trying.
Every movie.
Yep.
Every movie. Yeah.
That's one to grow on. Like,
although Wind Rises is like, I don't know if we'll ever do that one because that's the same. We'll never do Grave of the Fireflies because I wouldn't do that to you all. But
I watch that on my own every 5 years or so just because I hate life, I guess.
Yeah.
Is that the depressing one?
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, Wind Rises is pretty depressing though. Too. Oh. Wind Rises is, yeah, that's Takahata, the other guy, whatever, however you pronounce his name.
Mm-hmm. I think that's it.
Did everyone see the Princess, what is it, Cayuga? I can never pronounce these words.
Mm-mm. No.
I had to watch Grave of the Firefly for my history of animation class in college. That's where I saw it first.
Yeah, that's the place where you would see it.
Mean teacher.
Yep.
It's an important movie, capital I. You gotta watch that, Akira, and Ghost in the Shell. And then
I've still never seen Akira.
I
owned it for like 15 years and I never got around to watching it.
I'm not that big of a fan. I watched it and I'm like, this is what everyone's... By that point, I'd already seen Ghost in the Shell. I'm like, this is no Ghost in the Shell.
I knew that was going to happen, so I just never bothered.
Yeah. It's not terrible, but it's kind of silly and childish. And it established a lot of tropes, but it is not a great work of art, I think.
Well, then I don't feel bad for missing it.
But Kiki, come on.
Yeah, and that is also, I haven't gotten around to seeing it. And at this point, I am worried that I'm not going to like it as much as everybody says I will. Like, that it's just been built up so much that there's no way it can live
up to
the
hype. It's not. I can help you with that now. It is not, like, fabulous and transcendent. It's chill. Right. The whole thing about it is that it's chill. That's its thing that it has going for it, that it's, like, calm and just, you know, you'd watch it when you want to relax or if you're, like, at home, sick. It is not like, wow, this is the most amazing movie I've ever seen. You will not feel that way. You're not supposed to. It's not
that. And Totoro both are just like big warm blankets.
Yep.
Yeah.
Snuggies of animation.
Yeah. Kiki's Delivery Service was the first Miyazaki movie I saw. And it was like what my friend used to like ease me into it. And then he threw Spirited Away at me. And I was like,
a big step
I don't.
Up.
Right. I was like, what is this? What is this like no face thing? I don't understand. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
I feel like
parents
there are a
pigs?
Lot of.
What?
And right,
then a garbage monster will come.
Right.
Sure. Of course.
And I'm like,
why not?
I feel like there are a lot of cultural references that I just do not understand with Spirited Away. And I still like it. But it's a movie that I don't think I'll ever understand fully.
We'll do it eventually on the show.
And, sure.
I have many theories.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. All right. Everybody pass the files along. You know how it goes.
How does it go?
You send me your files.
Oh, okay.
It goes like this.
I didn't recognize this new construction.
La, 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 la.
Send me your files, I get.
Yeah, I was doing something
Pass
different
the files
there.
Along, I'm like, whoa.
Keep circulating
doing,
the tape, Steve.
That's not how this works.
Yeah.